Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr. Who was this man? What character traits did he possess? What qualities did he encourage in those who followed him? I remember when I first heard about Dr. King, he appeared in a children's book, and I still remember the drawing of him standing on some balcony looking out over crowds and crowds of people. The specifics of the book are gone, but I was left with the clear message that King was a hero, someone to look up to model ourselves after. He was a good man with a capital G, and we should pay attention to what he has to say. As I got older, I began seeing photos of the civil rights movement, read books in which the characters talk about things like water fountains for white people and colored people. King's I Have a Dream speech gradually made its way into my consciousness, and I heard about a woman who refused to go to the back of the bus and started a civil rights movement. I began forming a picture of a moment in time of strength and courage and boldness. Gradually, complexity was added to heroism. I learned that Rosa Parks didn't just happen to stand up one day, but trained her whole life leading up to this act of nonviolent resistance. I heard a quote that stuck with me from a bus boycotter who, for months, walked for miles to get to and from a job that was already physically demanding. "My feet is tired, but my soul is rested," she said, and I got a glimpse into not only the stamina required of those who participated, but also of the soul-healing power of what they did. I discovered, more complexity, that King had his flaws, made mistakes, wasn't perfect, but I found this didn't actually diminish the power and value of his leadership or his legacy in my mind. I learned that Martin Luther King's dream that we look to the content of character rather than the color of skin didn't mean we should be colorblind. We need to recognize that while bias based on skin color is terribly damaging, we must also recognize that the experiences of people of color in this country are unique and important and meaningful. And I learned that Martin Luther King didn't just talk about race and racism. He talked about globalization, about nationalism, about the military-industrial complex. He talked about poverty and capitalism and socialism. He had big ideas, much bigger than the passing of the 14th Amendment, and some say it's those ideas that multiplied the threats on his life. Some say it was those ideas that got him killed. I wonder what big ideas he would be preaching today. I wonder what he would say about emails and Russian hacking and isolationism and the new nationalism. I wonder what differences he would highlight between then and now and what similarities he would draw. I wonder what he would say to motivate the people who are today oppressed. And I wonder what he would say to us, to me. Interestingly, amazingly, as I zoomed through one sermon after another in preparation for today, I found his words speaking to me almost as if he was writing today. Here's a quote. "This season finds us a rather bewildered human race." This was from his last Christmas sermon in 1967. "We have neither peace within nor peace without." He was not talking about our modern-day political polarization. He was not talking about the anxieties running through our social media outlets, our national news, or inside us. He wasn't talking about our current crisis of growing social isolation. He wasn't talking about the soul-maddening state of our current world. He was talking about the Vietnam War, the Cold War, the struggle for civil rights, the confusions of his day. He was lifting up the human tendency to divide and offering a reminder of our fundamental connectedness, truths to hold on to for today. Our loyalties must transcend our race, our tribe, our class, and our nation, he preached. And this means we must develop a world perspective. We must either learn to live together as brothers, or we are all going to perish together as fools, he said. Or in other words, we must begin with connection, with relationship, with common ground, if we are ever going to even begin to tackle the challenges of our day. As I continued reading, among the many passages and ideas that resonated with me, three in particular stood out. Three core character traits that Martin Luther King embodied and preached that I'd like to highlight today. Not because they are the most important of the many moral messages he delivered, but because they struck me as particularly relevant to the place we stand in history. Ways of being that will guide us toward the ends we seek, embodied values that can hold us steady and help us live our best in today's shifting modern world. These have to do with tough-mindedness, tender-heartedness, and with Martin Luther King's iconic founding value, nonviolence. First, a tough mind. The tough mind is sharp and penetrating, King writes, breaking through legends and myths and sifting the true from the false. The tough-minded individual is astute and discerning. And who doubts that this toughness of mind is one of man's greatest needs? Yet there is, he continues, an almost universal quest for easy answers. He goes on to highlight in this sermon our human gullibility. We are easily led to purchase products because radio or TV tells us it's the best. Advertisers capitalize on this susceptibility with skillful and effective slogans. This gullibility is also seen in the tendency of many readers to accept the printed word of the press as final truth, he said. Few people realize that even our authentic channels of communication, the press, the platform, in many instances, the pulpit, do not give us objective and unbiased truth. Our minds are constantly being invaded by legions of half-truths, prejudices, and false facts. One of the great needs of mankind, King concludes, is to be lifted above the morass of false propaganda. This section of Martin Luther King's sermon gave me such pause as we try to navigate the thicket of he said, she said, hall of mirror stories and so-called fake news that easily leave us feeling uncertain of what on earth is actually going on. I had a long conversation this week with a UU who is also a Republican about the news we are hearing from both sides of the aisle. How our social and other media take pieces of unfolding current events and emphasize one piece or another, talking up some facts, downplaying others, and telling a story that appeals to one side or the other, no one fully unbiased. It's so like the morass that Martin Luther King describes that I imagine one of the core character traits he would want for us today is a discerning mind. A discerning mind to separate the true from the false, to stop bias and step around it, taking in what sounds true and leaving the rest. But I also think King would have us take a particularly hard look at ways in which misinformation can further oppression, the ways in which it can feed into racial inequality and racism, an issue that continues to plague us in ways that are confounding but persistent. An issue that appears to have come round again with a new face and some new language, but whose roots and whose impact have been with us for a long, long time. An issue that is, for many white people, confusing, hard to see, hard to grasp. Hasn't this been fixed? some ask. It's not fixed. And here, too, we must be tough-minded. We must be willing to ask ourselves tough questions and be willing to hear tough answers. Many of us who are white have things to learn about how racial prejudice really works. Many of us have been largely sheltered from its effects, the way it systematically disempowers people of color, the way it is all largely invisible to those of us who are not targets of it, but how we are part of an unbalanced system all the same. And here, too, we who are white must begin with open, discerning minds because it's so easy to feel defensive or accused or simply like, it has nothing to do with me. Here, all of us, no matter where we are in the picture, must bring courage because it's easy to offend or be offended. And here we must bring that tender heart that was one of King's core messages because it is so easy in difficult conversations to lead with defensiveness instead of openness, or on the other side, to lead with judgment instead of with compassion. King believed that not only a tough mind but a tender heart were key in the fight for freedom and justice. A tough mind to discern the truth and fight for it. A tender heart to do it not from anger or judgment, but from love. A combination that led him to the concept of nonviolence, to peaceful means toward equitable ends, to his revolutionary philosophy and a movement that changed this nation. His was a method with a message so compellingly human, as he envisioned it in his Christmas sermon, that we will not only win freedom for ourselves, we will so appeal to your heart and conscience that we will win you in the process, and our victory will be a double victory. With tough-mindedness, tender-heartedness, and with a non-violent approach, he preached, we can win justice, and we can win you. With a line like that, from a leader like him, I want to be one, and I want to help win others. That was nearly 50 years ago, and the violence they faced was physical. Dogs, clubs, fire hoses, fists, and the nonviolence King preached was physical too. Cover your head. Don't hit back. Do not retaliate. Today, for most of us, the violence we will face in our quest to live our values is not physical. Most of us are not likely to face dogs, clubs, or fists. May that be so. The violence we face today is verbal. It's words, written and spoken. It's emotional, attitudinal even. And it is these non-physical expressions of violence to which we will be tempted to react with our own emotions, angers, or attitudes, our own stories about the other guy, whoever that other guy is. We still need nonviolence. We still need conviction, and we still must begin with love. A loving nonviolence that leads with humility and curiosity and openness. A discerning nonviolence that looks past confusion, that sorts fact from fiction, sees bias clearly and works to resist it. A tough nonviolence that won't give up easily, that finds allies, finds support, and offers support to others. 50 years after Martin Luther King was shot, we are living in a time when the call is being sounded. Fears of civil rights rollbacks are being raised. Threats to liberties are being vocalized. We are living in a time for learning and for action. We are called, I believe, to deepen our understanding so we can better discern, and we are called, I believe, to broaden our relationships with our understanding of everyone, everywhere, those who are targeted, those who don't see it, even those who seem actively engaged in oppression. And the fact is, we are going to disagree. On this journey, we will hear things and experience things we don't like. We will disagree with people out there and with people in here sometimes. But if we can stay in it, with each other in here and out there, we all win. As a teacher of mine once said, if you disagree with a group of people but stay engaged, either you'll get smarter or they will. Hopefully both. There are many actions we can take. With respect to learning, next month the East Greenwich churches are planning to host another workshop on race and racism, this time for a showing of the film American Denial and Conversation. That's a great way to learn and engage with others. That's February 12th at 1 p.m. I know there are people going to the Women's March in Providence. I know there are groups springing up whose charge aligns closely with our values of justice for all. There is legislative work that you can get involved in. There are books to read, relationships to be built, and reflecting to be done. But we don't, any of us, have to do it alone. It's a blessing to do it together with toughness, with tenderness, with love, so that our feet, too, might be tired, but our souls, finally, can begin to feel rested. I end with words from Martin Luther King from his last speech before he was killed. We've got some difficult days ahead, but it really doesn't matter to me now because I've seen the mountaintop and I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. And I may not get there with you, he said. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people, we will get to the promised land. And so he writes, I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. And I'm not fearing any man. My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. May we have faith in the difficult days that lie ahead of us, that there is a promised land, and that we can, one step at a time, with each other, work to make it a reality. May it be so. Amen.